the ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 336. On the podcast today, I have Paul Johnson, a very sharp individual on a personal level, because he does a lot of personal investing himself, but also he is executive director of Metal Tiger. And I'm not going to bang on too long, because we do chat for a long time. But it's worth listening to the intro when Paul said, give a quick roundup of what Metal Tiger does. And listen to that very carefully. Doesn't give anything away, but it's almost like reading in between the lines, if you can do that, or listening in between the lines, I should say, because this is an audio, of course. I also have today's penny stock with potential today, suggested by you. By all means, go to sharepickers.com, click the link if you think you know of a penny stock that has lots of upside potential, and all you need to do is fill in the form there, give three reasons why. This podcast is dedicated to Green Eyes. That's apparently the username on iTunes. But thank you very much, Green Eyes. Give me a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. I'm what now, I think, 102 5-star ratings on iTunes. So it's going very well. And if you want a podcast dedicated to you, just do that. Go to sharepickers.com, click the link, give me a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and I'll read out your dedication. I'll do that later. Joining me on the podcast, much anticipated, I got to say, is Paul Johnson, executive director of Metal Tiger. Also, you know, quite a big weight, quite a heavy weight, not physically, in his own personal investing style. I mean, a lot of people follow you, Paul. Thanks for coming on again, by the way.
It's a pleasure, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
That's all right, because you know your stuff when it comes to investing on a personal level, and of course, with Metal Tiger, you're doing very well there, and the share price is doing very well recently, hasn't it?
Yeah, we're actually quite pleased, excuse me, because we've seen for quite some time that the share price has been nudging on a penny, but not really breaking over. But it seems to have had a good strong move recently, which is great. And we think, you know, it's about right, really, and about time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get the personal side of the way, because I know you'd like to invest on a personal level also. Now, I submitted a link to SurveyMonkey for people who wanted to talk to you. It's like if you had a Venn diagram, you know, we got questions that are overlapping here. So let's get the personal side of the way. A lot of people have seen your position in Nyota Minerals growing. That's NYO. And I think you're up to 6% now, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah.
What's the deal there?
Yeah, I thought that question might be coming. I've been buying into a number of different small companies in the resource space. I've been increasing in Nyota, so I can understand there's a degree of interest in what might be happening there. I just see it as a real value play. I look at the business, it's got a listing, it's dual listed, UK AIM and the ASX. It's got an interesting project in nickel project in Italy, and on top of that, it's also got some quite substantial tax losses in the background that may or may not be usable. So as a whole, it's quite a well-known company as well, actually, which is an important thing. Unfortunately, in today's market, that usually means people have lost a lot of money investing in it. But I like these scenarios where it's got quite high awareness and could have a decent turnaround. I've been building the position there, and it's just interesting to see how that turns out.
Yeah, because people have been tweeting me saying, ask him what he knows. Stare him in the eye. I can't stare him in the eye because we're doing audio only.
Looking at your picture.
Yeah, exactly. And see if he blinks, someone said. And I said, what does he know about this company? What inside information does he have? And is it just a case it's a value play here? You're just seeing it, you know, it's very undervalued. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, you know, who knows what transpires out of these things? Because I am quite a proactive individual, and I do tend to push the management teams where I make personal and company investments to get them to, you know, to look at their businesses and do the very best thing for shareholders. So who knows? But in terms of my investing strategy for these small companies, it's simply that I think, rightly or wrongly, it's at or near the bottom of the market. And from these sub-£1 million cap plays, you can get substantial returns if it goes well. And you don't need them all to perform. You just need a proportion. So that's where I'm going with that. And as for anything else, well, let's just see what transpires.
Yeah. And would you say this is one of the biggest investments you're in to date, or not, or the bigger ones that you haven't, you know, basically you haven't needed to put TR1 out?
Yeah, I think the reality is that it's not the biggest. It's just a question of what the market cap is on the business. Now, yeah. I own a variety of other shares where there isn't a TR1 requirement because the market cap's higher. I don't specifically go out TR1 hunting. It's just the nature of the value of the business vis-a-vis how much capital I want to commit to any one company.
I tell you what, the chart is looking nice there. I mean, you can see a definite support run by spot 04, and it's now up to spot 06, and it's almost touching that 200-day moving average, which,
You're getting too technical for me.
Do you not look at charts at all or not?
Not really, although I do like to look at the five-year charts on these resources plays because you see this enormous drop. And, of course, you have to factor in the dilution element and what's happened within the business to get a fair perspective. But I do think investors like on the market, they like to see these scenarios where, as in the case of Nyota, it was valued at 30 pence a share, would you believe, back here 4 or 5 years ago. And now it's valued at an absolute fraction, about 1/800, I think, of what it was at the top. So it's a nice scenario. We'll see what happens. If it comes off, great, and if it doesn't, well, that's life, isn't it?
Wow. are you that emotionally detached from it, though? You can't be, can you, from money like that? I mean, is it possible?
No, look, I think personally, I think £1,000 is an enormous amount of money. And that might sound a little bizarre in today's world, but I was once taught by a very experienced investor that if you think £1,000, for example, is not a lot of money, then you're certainly not rich, and you never probably will be if you don't have respect for money. So no, I don't put money in willy-nilly. I don't like to risk capital unless I think it's a balanced risk. But if you start getting too attached to the cash, then you're simply not going to perform in the best way that you can. This is really a numbers game. And as long as you don't risk more than you can afford to lose, I like to keep it as a numbers game. And then the benefits down the road, if it works out, you know, when you can go and buy something nice for yourself or for your family, that's fantastic. But until that point, I just like to keep it very simple.
Okay. All right. Well, before we go into Metal Tiger's business, for people who don't know about Metal Tiger, I know you're doing a lot of stuff there, Paul, but can you sort of give a quick summary as to what Metal Tiger's about for anyone who's never heard of you?
Of course I can. Now, just a little proviso here, that we are a growing, adapting and changing business. And we are looking at various and in a very advanced discussions, negotiations, commercial discussions, call it what you will, with regard to various new assets. So the description I give you really is the company right now at this moment in time, which may well change to a degree going forward.
Hey, I like that, Paul.
Did I? Now, what I'm saying, there's nothing there that isn't within R&S, so I'm absolutely
I know. I'm just saying something. Because obviously you're in talks with people all the time, I suppose, and that could change very soon. Is that what you're saying, basically?
Well, we are, but in all honesty, the situation is that we don't like to pursue too many things in too much detail too quickly. And we find ourselves in a situation where we have a number of different opportunities that are potentially on the cusp of crystallisation. And that's an interesting place to be. It means an enormous, enormous amount of work going in by this company that people don't see, of course, because the market doesn't allow you to be specific until you've done a commercial deal and everything is sealed off. Anyway, going back to your question, Metal Tiger was formed out of Brady Exploration, which was a listed natural resource investing company. It was operating on AIM back in 2014, and in June 2014, we put some money into Brady to refinance it, changed the name to Metal Tiger. Towards the end of the year in 2014, early 15, we changed the business into two divisions. One is direct equities, where we have been investing in natural resource companies listed on AIM. And one was direct projects, where we were investing in joint ventures for projects in the resource space on the grounds. That's where we find local partners who are very proactive and very capable, and we help them finance their operations in exchange for them doing work on the ground. So the two divisions, and that's where we sit today. Now, people are quite well aware of our direct equity investing activities, where we've gone notifiable. But we do quite a bit in the background too that people don't necessarily see. With regard to our direct projects, we have four interesting direct projects at the moment. We have a tungsten gold opportunity in Spain, which is progressing really, really well, and all the news announcements cover that. In fact, we provided the market with an update on Spain on the 29th of October. So if people want to read about that, it's there on the RNS feed. We have operations in Thailand that we're funding, and we provided an announcement on the 7th of October to give people an update on Thailand. And we also have two joint ventures. Thailand, just to go back, is a gold antimony opportunity focused on one license at the moment, but we're potentially looking at taking a greater position in our joint venture there, which was announced in October. And then finally, we've got two joint ventures with Kibo Mining in Tanzania, one covering gold opportunities and one covering uranium opportunities. And that, Justin, is where we sit today, right, okay, at this moment.
Cool. Okay, well, let's go through some questions I've had from private investors. Okay, first one. Which, I like this, this shows loyalty to a company. Which of our direct investments, unless you wrote that yourself, Paul, which of our direct investments offers most upside, and what is your near-term expectation with OSU, Awesome Minerals, are they, given the drift in share price recently?
Okay, well, OSU is one of the direct equity investments.
Yeah.
It's one that we undertook through our on-market portfolio, which normally people don't see our trading activities there. But we went notifiable in OSU. The share price had a bit of a run, went up to 3 pence. Our entry level was a lot lower than that. It was, I think, I can't remember the precise figure, but it was in the low ones. And we're really just waiting for the market to switch on to OSU properly. The company itself has cash worth more than market cap. It's got an interesting copper project, which is a bit out of the money at the moment because of the low copper price. But strategically, it's close to the border. It's a Kazakhstani property close to the Chinese border in the east side of the country where there's lots of operating mines. It has an NPV, I think, of about 100-something million dollars, but it's at a higher copper price. So really, just a little bit of a waiting game. We think the market will eventually catch up. Also, is quite a spiky share from time to time. We're just waiting for the real move in the share price, if and when it comes. And if it does, then we'll make a lot of money and we'll be delighted because we can reinvest that within the business. amongst the direct projects, which project is the most has the most potential for value creation? Really difficult to say. Spain has been fantastic because it's delivered tungsten exploration data, the like of which perhaps we were optimistic for, but until we did some drilling, we couldn't be specific. But we've got really good grade, really good distribution of the mineralization, exactly as our joint venture partners anticipated. We've still got plenty of work to do along the strike and down, deeper down in the ground to see what the full extent of the tungsten is. So that's a fabulous project for us. Could have a tremendous value, but we're not there yet. Thailand is an open blue sky opportunity, huge prospectivity. We've made great progress on the ground. We've got the respect of the authorities because we've spent money doing work, and so few companies have in country. We've got great working partners in Thailand who know the country inside out, the licensing, the procedures, the operating side of the business. So we think that that could be a substantial opportunity for us. Tanzania, we're just in the early stages of working on those two JVs, so a bit difficult to say at the moment. But on the uranium side, we think uranium has a phenomenal future. I was in Munich last week at a mining event, and they one of the presenters was going through the dynamics for the uranium market, and it's incredible, and we want to build our uranium business quite significantly going forward. So difficult to say. We are fortunate because we have a number of options where we could do very, very well as a business amongst our direct projects division. And that doesn't include what may be coming on board in the near term.
Yeah. And do you think, will you scale back on investments and go, more head on with the direct, investment in projects? Or do you think, or you can just keep it sort of as it is?
No, I think our... We benefited over the last year, I suppose, by making... Well, we have obviously benefited by making lots of money on the direct equity side of the business, because that has defrayed dilution within the business. We're going to carry on doing that.
Yeah.
Because why not? If we can make money at the bottom of the market and we have the cash to invest in the direct equity side of the business, then we're going to do it. We might not talk about it as much because we think the real value for the investor base and what will move the share price more is the direct project side of the business. So our market announcements will be far more focused on the direct projects than the direct equities. But we will carry on working in the background trying to make money as well. Along the way, why not? You know, if I don't want the capital sat there in a bank account earning no interest, yeah. I want us to be using a sensible amount of our resources to trade and to make money for the company.
Yeah, okay. Well, I know you've been out and about this morning quite busy, but did you see Kibo's RNS this morning?
Yeah, I did. I only caught it very, very quickly, but it's nice to see that they're with this type of project that they have, which is a monster in Tanzania. It's nice to see that they are, you know, moving the business forward really effectively, and they're not sitting back and they're not waiting, you know, for these for updates every 3 months. They're really giving investors a good summary of how things are progressing bit by bit. And also I like the fact that they bother to explain in a little bit more detail in the CEO's comments about the rationale behind each piece of news. So yeah, it's a fabulous project, Mbeya. It's going to change the lives, most importantly, of many, many people in the local area by enabling industrialization and a quality of life to improve dramatically. So as investors and just in terms of the social benefits of what they're doing, it's great to see things move forward.
Okay. Next question. When are you expecting to generate income from the projects?
Oh, now there's the thing. It depends what we do, because we... I pause because I don't want to give people the wrong idea. Our aim is to have a focus on precious and strategic metals in our projects. It's to have good diversification by commodity, by geographic area of operations, so that we kind of manage and control the geopolitical risk. You don't want to be too focused in any one particular area. And I also want some diversification by stage of advancement in terms of whether something is early exploration through to production. If we're a proper serious business, we want to have that advancement diversification. Now, when do we take on board a revenue-producing opportunity is the question, and it's difficult for me to answer without giving the game away, as it were. But I would say that we would like to be in the next couple of years, and I keep that really vague in a reasonably long time period, we like to have income generation. And there's a reason for that, because I want this business to be self-sustaining as much as possible. We can achieve that potentially entirely, but let's be sensible here, through our direct equities trading side. It's possible. In the from the bottom of the market, tremendous gains can arise if you have the capital to invest.
Yeah.
It would also be great to have some regular income, and that income can come from production of some metal. It can come from royalties on projects that we invest in at this stage in the cycle. It can come from a whole heap of different things. So the two things together, trading combined with forms of revenue and margin, could make us self-sustaining. Now, if we do that, that means that we don't need the market for money per se. So we don't need to dilute on horrendous terms. And if we did dilute, we can dilute on really sensible terms as our share price rises materially in the market. So, yeah, it would be nice to have that relatively soon.
Yeah, well, the recent placing was quite welcomed, wasn't it? I mean, there wasn't a lot of negative about that. And, you know, it wasn't at a discount hardly, was it, at the time?
No, at the time it was done, I think it was the mid price. And we gave one-for-one warrants as part of the placing. And that's been our strategy in 2015. One, to get sensible money on sensible terms. And there's compensation almost for that. You know, the issue of one-for-one warrants at twice the share price. The side benefit of that, of course, is that if our share price rises materially, then we would have access to a pool of capital which would literally walk in through the door at a much higher share price than when we started with the warrant exercise. But what matters more, even more than the price that you get for the stock that you do in placings, is the type of people that you're having as your investors who come into these placings. You want people who have a good medium-term perspective on things, who are looking for major share price rises rather than a quick flipping 5 to 10% that the city loves so much. And those are the kind of people that we've been engaging with in 2015, which is fabulous. Yeah. So it was the market was right not to give that a bad reaction. We didn't anticipate at that specific point in time raising any money. We were made aware that some money might be available. We followed it down to see what the or investigated to see what was around. We got a sensible amount of money on sensible terms, so we did it, and that's great, because even though we don't need money to do what we plan to do within the business. And we are always prepared. If we've got a new transaction coming up, we've always got the capital that we need in the bank account ready to go. But by having that near £300,000 come into the business, then should we release new transaction RNSs, then people know easily and they will believe us when we say that we've got the cash resources to do it. We did anyway, but we definitely have it now, and they can see that very clearly. Yeah. By the fundraise, so it sets us up very nicely for what we hope to do in the near term.
And do you know what's nice? You are doing what you say, and you are gaining a bit of loyalty. I think you can tell from these questions, because I talk to CEOs on a regular basis, and we have these questions, and quite a few people here, different people, are saying as in they're a shareholder, they believe they are part of the company, which is nice. And there's a question here: our Spain tungsten project is shaping up to be a world class deposit. Will you sell the project in isolation or as a part of a whole company buyout?
Oh, that's a great one. Right. Well, yes, you could sell the project in isolation. You want to push it forward down the line aggressively with a view for the outside world that you're intent on taking this as far as you possibly can. The best way to sell something is not to give the impression you want to sell it generally within the market. A bit like anything else. You know, when you sell a car, the buyers come and you say, well, yeah, we know, we're not prepared to sell it for any price. We quite like it. It's been a family car, blah, blah, blah. If you say, I hate the damn thing, I want to get rid of it straight away, then people offer you bucket shop kind of money for it. And that's not what we're into. So we carry on, we build. It's an attractive asset in an attractive location. Has some interesting neighbours, as everybody knows. And as the demand for tungsten rises, and as interest in safe, secure Western assets increases, then that could be a very valuable part of our portfolio. And if we had a sensible offer for it, we would take it. We'd take it tomorrow. Well, take it today, actually, if it was there. Yeah. But it may well come in at any time. But in the meantime, we carry on work. Now, for the wider business as a whole, we're building a diversified resource investing company. We see tremendous opportunities at the moment to build that company, to diversify and to have an incredibly strong, powerful portfolio. That will enable us to sell individual assets, and at the right time in the market, probably not now and maybe not for another 12 or 18 months, I don't know, somebody will come along when the resource sector is stronger and will look for good diversified resource plays to buy into easily. Yeah. And potentially we could be a target for that kind of acquisitive activity down the line. Probably not quite now, but who knows in the future. The faster we build this thing and the stronger we make it, then people will definitely look at us, and we want them to look at us. We just don't want to sell out too cheaply whenever the option comes.
No. Do you know what? I'm just looking at the chart here. If you finish the day where you are now, you are at a six-month high, and you've never finished this high in 6 months. That's quite good, isn't it? The share price is gaining a bit of traction there.
Yeah, but you know what the thing is? And this is quite important from our perspective. Relative to our peers in the last year or so since we started, our share price is up, I don't know, what's that point? As we sit at the moment, it's about 0.65 over... five. So we're up about 120-130% from when we started this thing off. last year. And many of our peers are down dramatically since that point in time. So relatively, it's fabulous. We're really delighted. Absolutely, in terms of our share price, to move only from 0.5 up to a 1.15 as we sit today is actually very disappointing for us because of the amount of work that's gone in. And the fact that our first two main projects, commitments in terms of Spain, tungsten gold, Thailand, gold antimony, and building the Thai business, are really performing very, very well. So we feel that absolutely our share price should be a lot higher to reflect the progress that we've made. And that doesn't include all the trading profits that we've announced to market and so on. This is just looking at the project side. So we're grateful for where we are, yes, because you have to be in this crabby, awful environment in the sector, but we want more.
Yeah, but it does seem you're doing a lot for a market cap of 3.5 million. You know, you seem to be very busy, have a lot of projects on the go. Next question. When can we expect to see some gold grades for the Thailand project?
That's another cracker. Yeah. First of all, we publish all the information that's required of us with regard to all of our projects at any point in time. You have to also understand that with regard to certain times and certain areas of our operations, then we will be careful in terms of what we say. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to build a business and you're trying to grow what you do and you're looking at other opportunities, then you really don't, for commercial sensitivity reasons, you don't want to give the game away. Okay. So people need to be assured that we publish everything that we need to, but if and when we make decisions about perhaps not putting absolutely everything in or giving people everything they want, that will be probably for commercial reasons.
Okay. So could you please expand on Metal Tiger's exit strategy?
Yeah, we kind of have really, because we talked about it before. There is a real issue in our marketplace for resource companies because it's a cyclical business, right? There's no rationale apart from that, really. It's you go up in the big swing up. I'm drawing this in the air as we speak. And you go swinging down the other side. So you go from extreme undervaluation to extreme overvaluation. Now, being a good business means that you probably survive the bottom. Either in absolute terms or your dilution is less at the bottom, and that you probably go higher at the top because you've got a better business and people like it more and respond a bit quicker when the sector recovers. But the reality is, and this is something we're coming to terms with in our business, that if you want the very best for investors, the very, very best return, particularly from the bottom where we started, then you've got to look at an exit strategy to get people out when it moves up to its high level. Now, timing on that is quite difficult because the sector can seem quite irrationally overvalued and still go up five times in a major boom. If you look at the gold equities booms, they're quite incredible sometimes when they happen. So we have to judge that very carefully. But either via individual project disposals which would probably come with some reinvestment into the business and potentially capital distribution to shareholders if we have the balance sheet that enables us to do it. And we have so we have to get rid of any retained losses and so on before we can distribute to shareholders. Or we sell the company at the right time and obviously the shareholders then benefit from that transaction. We know we have to find the right exit for people so that they can get their money out of the business. Now, of course, to benefit from that swing, they have to stay, believe in us and stay as holders until the moment comes.
Yeah. Do you know what? People are trying to get as much information as possible here. When do Metal Tiger expect a third Spanish tungsten exploration license to be issued?
Ah, right. Okay. Well, we actually have released all the information with regard to that. All of these things, licensing and things that require regulatory approval and authorities, local authorities and so on, it is, of course, out of your hands to a degree. But in Spain, we have a team that works very closely with the authorities. We have the support locally of the authorities and we do push everything. So as soon as it comes to us, And as soon as anything like that is received, we would announce it to market. But it's a bit difficult sometimes to be specific on this.
Okay.
We've got plenty to do in Spain on the two existing licenses, plenty. And of course, as we get stronger and bigger, we'll accelerate our operations and we'll start to do more. But at this stage, we've got plenty to do.
Yeah, there's some people here know you're quite influential in your, you know, in your personal sort of capacity as an investor. It says, Paul, how do you fancy buying a pile of Premier African Mineral shares off Darwin and making a few quid overnight? Well, I think a nice wink at the end.
That's a great suggestion.
Yeah,
I met Premier African Minerals in very, very early stage. Very early stage. I think it might have been even pre-market when they were, you know, going around and letting people know. I followed the story loosely. I saw there was a major spike in the share price a little while back. I think they're now crumpling on the floor, like most of the companies, but they're not. Let's have a look. I'm getting it on the screen as we speak. So, they had a good move up from earlier on this year, from under a penny to over 3 pence, and then now they're down back under a penny. Oh, I will have. I promised that particular reader, listener, that I will have a careful look at this. Yeah, I see that they made an announcement 27th of October. I will have a close look at it.
When you look at a company, Paul, how long does it take you before you know you're going to invest? Okay, I mean, does it take 5 minutes, an hour, a couple of days, what, a week? What? I mean, on a personal capacity, this is.
Have you ever read the book by Malcolm Gladwell called Blink?
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I read half of it.
Did you? Read the other half.
Okay.
It kind of tells you all you need to know. Now, what it basically says is you can form a judgment about something very, very quickly. And that judgment usually is right.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, looking at this, it does look interesting on the chart, and it's worth having a dig around. But having said that, there's no substitute for reasonably proper thorough research. So we have an 8-point... mechanism that we use that looks at finance, existing capital, working capital and access to money, management team, business strategy, business continuity management, so that's how they manage their risk, geopolitical issues, technical project issues, commodities that they're operating in and so on. So when we look at it quickly and see if we feel comfortable, if it's a good story, then we dig down in a bit more detail using this kind of 8 category assessment tool, something that I've used personally over the years, and in the last recovery market it was exceptionally reliable in terms of a predictor of opportunities, and it's done reasonably well so far for us in terms of Metal Tiger, but the biggest factor is to buy these things when they're cheap and on the floor.
Because
you know what, you're lonely as hell, and you've got and the people, there's very few people on discussion boards. There's very little optimism. Even the management teams can be beaten down. And you don't feel like you want to invest in them. Well, that's exactly the time when you've got to invest in them. When the share price has moved up 150%, 250%, there might be justification for buying it, but everyone feels warm and cuddly and there's an active discussion board going on and you feel great. And it's not usually the time when you should be buying, but there's so many inexperienced people out there who get drawn up in the enthusiasm and momentum. You've just got to be a little bit careful.
Yeah. I mean, completely. It's all about. It is. It's an emotional rollercoaster. Avoid those spikes completely because they will damage you, won't they? And it's like you say, if you get interested in the stocks on the floor, when people start to get a bit of interest there, you hopefully a couple of 100% up nearly then, hopefully, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at this, for example, I'm going to quote the NIOTA example again.
Yeah.
But the share price is 0.05, say, mid.
Yeah.
And it's fallen all the way from 30 pence, which was a different time, different place, different assets and different share capital and issue, of course. But you look at that, and if you hold that from early doors and it goes up to 0.1 and you've made 100% on your money,
yeah.
You still can look at that on the graph. And if you look at the 5-year graph, you won't notice the rise.
Yeah.
If it goes up to 0.25 and you've gone 5 times your money in terms of profitability, and you look at that on the long-term chart, you might see a very tiny blip in the share price.
Yeah.
And this is the point, that when you're buying in these shares at the bottom of the market, if you're buying into companies that hopefully can survive and can get through this horrible downswing and then come out the other end, by buying in at the fractional share price lows that you get at the moment, the uplift is very, very material. And as soon as that share does lift to those much higher levels, there's plenty of people that will buy in.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get like a two or three waves of activity. And people sometimes are surprised when a share price doubles or triples, why we don't sell out or I don't sell out or whatever. And we don't, because we think there's more to come.
Yeah, yeah. So when did you start buying into Neota?
Oh, Lord, I don't know. In the summertime.
Oh, is it? So you're now up on that, are you?
Yeah, I'm probably up. Okay. Where is it now at the moment, price-wise?
0.06.
0.06, yeah. So technically, I'd be up. Okay. On that, but then you don't really want to, you know, to think about that. I'm not buying these small companies for a quick 30% or whatever, 40%.
Yeah.
I'm buying them because I think some of them, not necessarily all, but some of them will rise materially over a period of time, probably a few months, maybe a year or two. Who knows?
Okay, two more questions.
Yeah.
Specifically to Paul, what are your next business plans after Metal Tiger is sold?
I don't have any.
Good. All right, that's. I was hoping you'd say that. Yeah, that's good.
The most important thing from our perspective is that we keep our personal holdings in Metal Tiger as high as we possibly can. Yeah. When you get a bit of dilution, it's difficult to do, of course, you know, because you've got to throw more and more and more capital into it. But and because we get so few opportunities to buy stock as directors, it's a bit of a nightmare to buy the shares on the market. However. We have shares already. We have options and that kind of thing that can bolster our position. But we want to keep our shareholdings as high as we can, because if we make a fist of this, and if we build this business into a substantial concern, then we'll have a very, very significant holding in Metal Tiger. So Metal Tiger is our absolute focus of operations in the natural resource space, and we're really... and it will flourish and grow, and there will be different arms and things develop off it. But we're looking to build it into a very big business.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you a truthful as well, because you didn't hesitate one second. Okay, and last question. I don't know if you know anything about this. Will he do the monkey dance? He will know what you mean if I mention my name.
It's so funny. I keep an eye on things that are happening on Twitter and so on. You know, the discussion boards and all the rest, just because it's important. That's where our market is amongst the private investors. Mm-hmm. And then I saw this picture of a monkey dancing to some kind of music. Now, I actually physically couldn't do that at the moment because I have a horrendous bad back and sciatica. So the concept of dancing in that way is completely out of the question. But it was great.
I think I've seen that. Was that it's a Friday feeling? Was the monkey dancing?
Something like that. Yeah, it was good actually. And the whole family enjoyed that one.
Yeah, nice.
Including the kids, which was fabulous. No, we. I suppose yeah. If our share price maybe goes to 5p.
Yeah.
We'll maybe do a monkey dance for charity. How's that?
That'll give everyone a chance to buy now.
On a VWAP of 5 days, and I'll record a monkey dance for charity.
Marvellous. Paul, lovely to chat to you as always. And, you know, I hold stock in your company, I've got to say that, because I do believe what you say completely, and you seem like you do genuinely have shareholders' interests at the heart of this game you're playing here. It's nice to know that, you know?
No, it's important to know that. I think it's also important for people out there to understand that in our space, I know management teams, not Metal Tigers, but generally, are often viewed in a negative way, and that's often because of the share price of the stock and the difficult conditions in the market. Running a PLC company, as I discovered 3 years ago, when I first started, being involved on the boards of PLCs is incredibly time-consuming and difficult to do. It's not an easy thing. And at the moment, we have many resource companies who are struggling to raise finance and are really finding things difficult. They can't invest on the ground. They can't get hold of money. They can't grow their businesses. And the sector is really low. Sentiment's really bad. So I always try and cut the management teams a bit of slack. Metal Tiger's fortunate. We've got a significant amount of working capital for our requirements, current requirements and our plans. We've got a growing, flourishing business at the bottom of the market. And we are hugely grateful to the private investors around the country who are supporting us and giving us their time of day to read about us and to invest a little bit of money. We do not forget that our primary duty is to the private investors that support us, and that will not be forgotten whether we're a 3 million cap company or a 333 million cap company. We do, I think, have investors' interests at heart. We don't say that tongue-in-cheek. It's absolutely seriously. And as I say to many companies that I meet, you know, this fallacy of institutional investors being, you know, the great holy grail for resource companies is absolute nuts. You've got to focus on Joe in Blackpool, Fred in Glasgow, and so on. The people that are prepared to put a little bit of their money into your company have to be your focus.
Absolutely. Paul, lovely to chat to you. Have you spoken have you spoken to Terry recently?
I speak to Terry all the time.
How's he feeling?
Terry's very, very positive at the moment. We were just chatting the other day about how in Hong Kong the market, the sentiments and so on has really, really turned positively towards the, you know, gold and precious metals. Everything lags behind in reality, so even if we had major uplift in the UK AIM resource space, people wouldn't start to feel positive until about 12 to 18 months down the line. But it seems to be in Asia, which is a big powerhouse for resources, it seems to have turned already and be going in the right direction. I would love to talk you through the opportunities that we're looking at, seriously looking at, but obviously I can't. But what I can say is there is really tremendous value out there for companies like Metal Tiger. It takes sometimes a lot longer than you anticipate to crystallize transactions and do deals for a variety of reasons. But with the number of things that we have on the go and with the stage of progress of certain things, I am very confident that we'll be able to bring some updates to market in the near term that will hopefully inspire people even more than we have already.
Lovely. I look forward to that. And you can come back on when that's announced. Thanks, Paul. Speak soon.
Great. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Today's penny stock with potential is suggested by AIM Casino. I love that. You know, it's a realization or the acceptance that AIM is pretty much a bit of a casino. And it is. You know, I was looking at the odds a while back. I did do a blog post about it. And this is when I fell out of love with AIM back in the summer. And you realize it's very hard to earn money, but if you do earn money on AIM, you can earn lots of good money, and a lot of big money, if you get it right. But AIM Casino, the username used here, suggested Independent Oil and Gas, IOG. What does the company do? Oil and Gas Exploration. Now, I think AIM Casino, you're playing it right here, because I've got a bit of a queue, so if you do suggest a penny stock with potential, then, you know, you're going to be in a queue. Right? But I think about five people ahead of you probably by now. But Independent Oil and Gas, would you say this company is a short, medium, or long-term investment? Short-term, as VSA Capital Broker Report, has a 70% targets price, with highest risk being funding, which could be any day now. Therefore, maximum price rise is in the short-term. How many shares does the company have an issue? Around about 70 million. What's the current price and market cap of the company? This is why I think you're doing quite well here, because you say the price is 4.875 pence, market cap is 3.7 million. I've just checked the share price here and it is 7.25. So already, if you bought there at AIM Casino at that rate, at that level, you have a nice little bit of upside there. But let's have a look at the market cap. Check, the market cap is obviously higher now. IOG. And I have this flagged up to me quite a few times, to be honest. So it's 5.7 now, the market cap. Yeah, a couple of people on Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, it's a cracking resource for investing. And I have a list there. I have a list of, I think, 17 people now. Go to my profile, at SharePickers, and click the list. And there's 17 people there who I regard quite highly when it comes to valuing stocks and shares, penny stocks and shares, and they're always worth following. But anyway, so 5.7 million now, the market cap, not 3.4 million. List three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, falling from 17 or 20 pence due to the funding not going through. Therefore, once current funding negotiations complete, should see levels again. I did a while back. Wow, how bad is my memory? Yeah, I didn't make a lot. I made a couple of hundred quid on them, and I got back out because I'm trying to whittle down my portfolio. I have to be ruthless. I've spread too thin, but you know, definitely weren't worth getting in. If let's have a look. Where's the chart on this? if it comes back a bit now to around about 5.5, definitely worth getting in this. Walk level there, seems like. Number two, drilling planned at advanced stage with plenty being sorted behind the scenes. Looking to drill before the new year. Number three reasons, compared to peers with similar or less net asset value and oil resources, it is valued 10 times less. Also take CEB as an example. Zero assets yet valued 2.5 times higher. Huge oil reserve in the North Sea. That's Independent Oil and Gas. I sold out at a small profit there, but it was a profit, you know, and that's how I console myself anyway. I think the rise is still there. Of course, if funding comes through, the rise is going to be there. Extremely big rise. And you can look at the chart there, IOG, just look at the chart. It's gone 5 pence, zoomed up to 20 pence, come back down on that failure of funding, and it's come back down back to 5 pence again. So that funding goes through. And I heard one of the guys on Twitter say, it's going to happen. The reserves there are too big for it not to happen. Then it'll shoot back up. It's just that uncertainty. It's the risk-reward, isn't it, really? So you could put a stop loss in at 5 pence, you know, and you may get tripped out accidentally. In fact, if you were to play it, but listen, I'm not going to tell you how to invest here. Please do your own research, okay? Thank you for listening. That's it for the podcast. Apart from to say, this podcast is dedicated to Green Eyes, who gave me a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. And this is what Green Eyes says. This is the one. That's what he said. Thank you, Green Eyes. After a friend recommended me to this podcast, my journeys to and from work, any journey for that matter, has been replaced with Justin on the podcast. Do you know what? That is nice to hear. It really is. I wrote an article yesterday. If you're on my newsletter, please go to sharepickers.com, sign up to the weekly newsletter. I wrote an article about the future of radio is radio, but not as you know it. And I believe the future will be, and it's going to happen. And this is basically the basis for my article there. I remember going back to, 20, 25 years, and having 3 TV channels, and you could not watch anything you wanted. You had to watch what was on, when it was on, there and then. There was no choice. Look where we are today. I very rarely watch anything now that's not on catch-up or on demand. Radio is going that way. I cycle into work. I don't have to listen to FM. I listen to podcasts. That's all I do. But when podcasts become as easy as touching, you know, a button on your preset on your radio, that's when the power of the podcast will be unleashed. And I believe that's going to happen. And so what I'm saying is here, look at the people that were in power of this audio. An Audio Boom, who I own, is one of them. And they will turn out to be, in a couple of years' time, when, you know, access to podcasts is as simple as access to your local FM station, these companies will be re-rated. At the moment, they're super undervalued. But that's the future. The future is on demand. It's happened with TV. It will happen with radio. Guarantee it. Okay, and now, I think Audio Boom is down about 7-8% a day. It's around about 4 pence. You know, they're only valued at about 20 million. And if you look at the amount of listens they get per day, and it's comparable with a big radio group in this country, like a Bauer Group, who are valued in excess of 150, maybe 200 million, they're super undervalued. And yet, that is the future. They're going to grow. And I've got to say, you know, traditional radio groups will not grow much further. This is a company in growth, you know, completely. So check that out, that article. Anyway, what I'm saying, Green Eyes, is thank you for listening to and from work on your driving. That's nice. And I went off on a slight tangent there. Anyway, I'm a relatively new investor and I've learned a vast amount about stocks and shares from here by Justin providing fantastic information and coverage on the market, as well as in-depth conversations with CEOs and especially the super traders like Big Gib, Andy Bloster. I'm looking forward to many more of the podcasts and creating an account on Twitter just to follow you guys so I can increase my knowledge. Keep up the good work, Justin. Thank you very much. Do you know what? I really appreciate that. I do. Mucho appreciatus. Because that means a lot to me. It really does. By all means, please give me a review, a dedication, and I'll read it out on the podcast. And that's it. Please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation on this podcast. It's only just opinion. Please do your own research. Thank you very much for listening. Speak tomorrow. Mucho appreciatus.
The ADBFN podcast with Justin Waite.